Jesus returning to Nazareth for the last time. And we got into talking about him sending out the 12 apostles to spread the word. And we kind of rushed through the last half of chapter 10 because I wanted to get that in. But before we move forward tonight, we're going to go back and look at that a little bit. Before we do that, Mike, would you mind leading us in a word of prayer? Amen. Okay, so before I get into to putting anything out there, so the last part of chapter 10, so all the entire chapter, Matthew chapter 10, is Jesus giving instructions. He's sending the 12 out, and he's giving them instructions. He sends them two by two. He gives them very specific instructions on how they conduct themselves from city to city, that if a city doesn't welcome them and receive them, to move on. He gives them instructions not to take anything with them that they'll be provided for. And he also, in order to help give them credence when they're out there teaching, he it says up in the beginning of the chapter, it says that he gave them power over unclean spirits to cast them out, gave them power over sickness and disease. So they were going to be able to heal people. They were going to be able to cast out demons. All of this as part of being able to back up the word that they were bringing. So who did he give those instructions to? Okay, the 12 apostles, right? So who's included in that? Yeah. Something that we overlook sometimes, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time looking at this, but Judas was one of those 12. So I can't gather anything out of that other than at this time, now we know later that Judas will betray him, but at this time he believed as much as any of the other apostles believed. Right? I don't think Jesus would have given him all the power over unclean spirits and to heal people and everything else if he didn't have a decent heart at the time. And I only bring that up is just, again, that's something we should take notice of, because good, faithful Christians can be tempted to do bad things, right? And we know Judas was sorry for what he did. Now, he didn't handle it the way God would want him to handle it when he was sorry for what he did. But, I mean, people don't commit suicide if they're not extremely sorry for what they've just done, right? You know, I think it's important that we take notice that he was one of the 12. He was sent just like the rest of them. And as far as we know, he went out and just like the rest of them went from city to city teaching, healing people, and everything else. And I just want to bring that up because it's something we overlook. Sometimes the only thing we think of when we think of Judas is his betrayal of Christ. And that is the most significant thing. I'm not putting anything down on that. But at one time, Judas was just as faithful as any of the other apostles. And we need to remember that, and we need to recognize that we need to be aware of those same things today. We can have people who are very good Christians, been Christians for 30 years, and they can fall into temptation, right? And we shouldn't be shocked by that. God doesn't hide that from us. He reveals it right here to us that it can happen. And so we just need to, you know, sometimes I think we try to, just give me one second. Sometimes I think we try to, you know, emphasize how important it is to keep watch on new Christians and people that have just been faithful. Well, oh, we really got to help them. We all need help from time to time. Yeah, and we don't know, but again, just, and I could be completely wrong on this, but I don't think Jesus would have given somebody with a bad heart the ability to do all these things. So it's possible that all that started, because really, they had just kind of come together anyway as the 12. There's a lot of the disciples, so I don't know how long he was over the treasury, but we do know that that wasn't the only temptation he fell into, right? He also had a tendency to be money hungry, so... So I'm not trying to paint Judas as anything other. Just recognize the fact that at one time Judas was, from all indications, just as faithful as any of the others. He just fell into some temptations and didn't handle it well. And we just need to be aware that the same thing can happen to us. Yes.
It said in one of the Gospels that if Satan entered Judas's heart, I tried to find it, I just can't find it offhand. But it says that, only says it in one of the Gospels that. That moment. So I would presume, although he certainly was the carrying the money around, but it doesn't say it's on that time that Satan entered his heart.
Yeah. And so again, I don't want to go way off the deep end on this. It's just something to be aware of, something for us to keep in mind, because we'll run into things like that. There'll be people that we're convinced in our heart that are good, strong, faithful Christians for many years, and all of a sudden, what happened? Right? I mean, it's happened to me on several occasions. Whether it was infidelity between a couple that you would have never thought of, or, you know, somebody just giving up on the Lord. You know, it's happened. And people that, you know, I have an uncle that, because of the death of his child, just kind of gave up on God. But I wouldn't, when I was a young man, he was a member here. He was a member here when I was a young Christian, and I can remember him and my other three uncles and my father being the five men up here on the table, and my father's passed away, and only one of those four uncles that were faithful then are still faithful now. And the one I'm talking about that lost his child, I was convinced he would be an elder one day. I mean, he taught the high school classes here when he was a young man. But things happen, and we just need to be aware of that. It can happen, and it's good for us to keep an eye on those that are new to the faith, but we need to keep an eye on all of us, right? Because things can happen to any of us. And I just brought that up to kind of highlight that. It just shows that can happen. Also, one other thing I want to bring up before we move on into tonight. Verse 42 of chapter 10 says, "And whoever gives one of these little ones only a cold cup of water in the name of a disciple, assuredly I say to you, he shall by no means lose his reward." And again, it's just a little thing. It's not the centerpiece of the whole scripture teaching there. But it's just a little thing that we need to take notice of, that God's watching our actions. Yeah, it's not... Is it important for us to be out there teaching and sharing the word with people? Yeah, but it's just as important how we treat people, right? If we can go out there and teach everybody we run into, but if we're rude and obnoxious and treat them like dirt, you ain't going to get nowhere. And so it's just another little, Jesus is going through all this stuff, you know, all this other stuff, and then he ends it with, if you just give a cup of cold water, you will by no means lose your reward. So, again, just a little thing for us to take notice of, that the teaching and all that he had for them to go out there and do and all the power that he gave them and everything else, and he still reminds them, treat people right. Right? Do kindness to people. Because that's a huge thing in how effective we will be in getting other people interested. You know, if we act just like the rest of the world, then everybody's going to say, well, they're just like the rest of the world. No point in listening to anything they've got to say. You know, it tickles my ear, it's fun, it's whatever. It's an interesting little conversation over the water cooler, but no more than that. So, And again, like I said, that's by no means is that the central focus of what Jesus is telling them here, but it's just something for us to point out with it. After he tells them all of this stuff, he reminds them, treat people kindly. Okay, anything else on that? All right, so we're going to move into Herod and the story of John the Baptist's death. So we will read the three gospel accounts of that really quick and then get into where we want to go. I'm going to start in Luke, just because it's the shortest of the three accounts. So Luke chapter 9, verses 7 through 9. It says, now Herod the Tetrarch heard of all that was done by him, and he was perplexed, because it was said by some that John had risen from the dead, and by some that Elijah had appeared, and by others that one of the old prophets had risen again. Herod said, John I have beheaded, but who is this of whom I hear such things? So he ought to see him. So he sought to see him. Okay, so now let's go ahead and turn over to Matthew's account. Matthew chapter 14, verses 1 through 12. And again, I'm reading from the New King James, so if you have a different version, just do your very best to follow along and keep up. So chapter 14, starting in verse 1. At that time, Herod the Tetrarch heard the report about Jesus and said to his servants, this is John the Baptist. He is risen from the dead, and therefore these powers are at work in him. For Herod had laid hold of John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother's Philip's wife, because John had said to him, it is not lawful for you to have her. And although he wanted to put him to death, he feared the multitude because they counted him as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday was celebrated, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod. Therefore, he promised with an oath to give her whatever she might ask. So she, having been prompted by her mother, said, give me John the Baptist's head here on a platter. And the king was sorry. Nevertheless, because of the oaths and because of those who sat with him, he commanded it be given to her. So he sent and had John beheaded in prison, and his head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, and she brought it to her mother. Then his disciples came and took away the body and buried it and went and told Jesus. All right, so now let's turn over to Mark's account. Mark chapter 14. Nope, Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6, verses 14 through 29. So Mark chapter 6, verses 14 through 29. Starting in verse 14, now King Herod heard of him, for his name had become well known, and he said, John the Baptist is risen from the dead, and therefore these powers are at work in him. Others said, it is Elijah, and others said, it is the prophet, or like one of the prophets. But when Herod heard, he said, this is John, whom I beheaded. He has been raised from the dead, for Herod himself had sent and laid hold of John and bound him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother's Philip's wife, for he had married her, because John had said to Herod, it is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. Therefore Herodias held it against him and wanted to kill him, but she could not, for Herod feared John, knowing that he was a just and holy man, and he protected him. And when he heard him, he did many things and heard him gladly. Then an opportune day came when Herod, on his birthday, gave a feast for his nobles, the high officers and the chief men of Galilee. And when Herodias' daughter herself came in and danced and pleased Herod and those who sat with him, the king said to the girl, ask me whatever you want, and I will give it to you. He also swore to her, whatever you ask of me, I will give you up to half my kingdom. And she went out and said to her mother, what shall I ask? And she said, the head of John the Baptist. Immediately she came in with haste to the king and asked, saying, I want you to give me at once the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And the king was exceedingly sorry, yet because of the oaths and because of those who sat with him, he did not want to refuse her. Immediately the king sent an executioner and commanded his head be brought. And he went and beheaded him in prison, brought his head on a platter and gave it to the girl, and the girl gave it to her mother. When the disciples heard of it, they came and took away his corpse and laid it in a tomb. Okay, so that's the story that we have of John the Baptist's beheading. So what do we get from all of this?
Don't lust after young ladies dancing.
Okay. What's that? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's one thing we need to be extremely careful of is don't let our, as my football coach in high school used to say, don't let your alligator mouth overrun your bullfrog butt. He said, we got to be careful about what we say, right? We got to be real careful about the promises we make, being you know, acting on quick impulse. You know, we say something, well, yeah, he wasn't going to go back on his word. He had all those witnesses and everything else. And so even though it's the last thing he wanted to do, he still had to do it. What else do we see in that?
John had the courage to tell Herod what he needed to hear, you know, regardless of the consequences.
Yeah, right? So John was not afraid to proclaim what needed to be said. What can we deduce from the fact that it was unlawful for Herod to have his brother's wife?
You know what else was unusual about this whole situation? When, even though Herod, who was talking, he actually heard him. He did many things, and he heard him gladly. It's kind of an unusual statement that he was actually excited to hear it.
Yeah, it was the big problem with John was from Herodias, not from Herod himself. So, but we can pretty well know that Herod's brother Philip was still alive at the time, or it wouldn't have been unlawful for him to have her as his wife, right? Chance, they weren't even in any way divorced or anything. We don't know, as far as I know, history doesn't tell us exactly what happened there, but we can deduce from this that if John's going to stand up there in front of him and say it's not lawful for you to have her as your wife, Philip is probably still alive, and they're probably still, at least in God's eyes, married, right? So he's telling him it's not lawful for him to have her as his wife, and that upsets Herodias, and she's all upset with him. Herod has great respect for John the Baptist, and but Herodias is upset because he's embarrassed her. And so when the opportunity comes up and Herod makes a hasty vow.
But the king was sorry. Yeah. Says
yeah. He was very sorry that he had done it, but he did it and he kept his word and he had John beheaded. So what else do we get from this story? Go ahead.
Get married, then that makes it okay. But here's the marriage, but it's still adultery.
Yeah, this along with other scriptures that we have. You know, there are people that I truly feel terrible for who weren't exposed to God's word, got married, got divorced, and all of a sudden they come to God, and they have a very difficult decision to make. And I don't envy that whatsoever, but it's clear as it can be. The only way it's not clear is if you're looking for a reason to not make it clear. But it's as clear as it possibly can be, out of the Lord's own mouth, you know, that except for fornication, except for adultery, there is no reason for a man and wife to get divorced. None accepted by God whatsoever. That's it. We can like it. What's that? Yeah, and we can like it or we can not like it. We can, and like I said, there are some people that I truly feel terrible for. I know a couple like this that they were married, both of them married and divorced, unscripturally divorced, and then married, and they actually handled it the best way I ever heard of anybody handling. He continued to support her. He bought a little camper trailer and put it out behind the house and lived in the house and everything else. They had kids together. They functioned as a family, but they did not have any more to do with each other as far as the marriage was concerned. Go ahead.
Going with what Leon said, this is a good passage because there are some people who believe that the marriage law is limited to Christians, which is not true. The marriage law goes back to the book of Genesis, even in Matthew 19, when the Jews tried to trap Jesus concerning marriage and what the law said. Jesus didn't take them to Exodus. He took them back to Genesis. In the beginning, it was not so. So the marriage law is universal. Whether or not someone understands it or believes it, it's still a common law.
Yeah, and we can go to other things like that. We can has murder always been against God's law, regardless of whether you believed him or not? We can go all the way back to Cain and Abel. We don't have any written record of any law or anything else, but Cain murdered him and he knew it was wrong. And, you know, that's sexual temptations are certainly one of the ones that are difficult for one of the most difficult for most people. But there are people on this earth that if you put drunkenness or a sexual encounter in front of them, they'll fall to the drunkenness before. So temptations are different for everybody. Some people are tempted. But, you know, all throughout the Bible, we're given very clear indications of what God expects, regardless of whether you believe it or not, regardless of whether you want to believe it or not, regardless of what your situation is. It can't be any more clear than it is that God expects, once you're married, you're married. And unless somebody commits adultery, that marriage doesn't end as far as God's concerned. So therefore, you have no right. I don't care what the laws of the United States say or the laws of Florida say. God's law says you're still married. You have no right to marry anybody else if you got divorced for any other reason. So what else do we get from the story of John the Baptist? It's beheading. Turn back to Deuteronomy. Chapter 34. Deuteronomy chapter 34. And Chuck, would you mind reading verses 10 through 12 for us?
Sure. Deuteronomy 34, 10 through 12.
Yep.
But since there has not arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses, in whom the Lord knew face to face, and all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt before Pharaoh, before all his servants and all his land, and by all the mighty power and all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel.
Okay, so reading those verses, is there any doubt in anybody's mind how God felt about Moses? For God, through his inspired word, to have those words written about Moses gives us a pretty clear, I know God is no respecter of persons, I'm not trying to say anything like that, but Moses was pretty special in God's eyes, right? Now let's turn over to Luke chapter 7. And Luke, Clay, would you mind reading Luke chapter 7, verses 26 through 28?
Sure. Well, what did you go out to see, a prophet? Yes, I say to you, more than a prophet. This is he of whom it is written, Behold, I send my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way before you. For I say to you, among those born of women, there is not a greater prophet than John the Baptist. But he who is
Any doubt in anybody's eyes how God feels about John the Baptist? We read those words written about Moses, and now here he says there's not been one born of woman greater than John the Baptist. Any doubt whatsoever about how God feels about John the Baptist? But what happened? Yeah, right? So one of the things that we can get from this, you know, Matthew chapter 5, verses 40 through 48, Jesus makes a statement there that God sends rain on the good and the bad, right? It's not, that's not the center of what he's teaching there, but that's a statement that he makes in there, that God blesses. You know, so even terrible, evil people benefit from God's blessings, right? And vice versa is true. Even good men that we have, there is no reason for anybody to doubt exactly how God felt about John the Baptist, and yet terrible, evil things can still happen. Right? God hasn't promised us anything in this physical life that is going to be pleasant. He hasn't promised us anything. All he's promised us is that we have a reward that is worth all the suffering we're going to have to do on this earth. That the reward we get when we get to heaven is going to be so much greater than anything we had to deal with to even compare. But God never promised. Matter of fact, he goes out of his way to make sure that we know that life's not going to be pleasant for you. If you follow me, it's going to be difficult at times, right? God doesn't hide that from us. And here's an example of a man that we know God loved. We know, and I know God loves everybody, but we know how God felt about John the Baptist, and he was still put to death in a terrible way, right? Yeah, beheaded him for just making a true statement, right? And so, you know, you'll hear people that will talk about, oh, you must not be living right because God's not blessing you. Well, you know what? I tend to look at it from the opposite direction. If everything's going perfect for me and I'm not suffering at all and everything is going, I may not be living right because Satan must not be trying very hard, right? If there's no thing in my life, whether it's knee pain or aggravation at work, whatever it is, if I'm not suffering in any way, I really need to be looking, not that, oh, great, God must be blessing me, everything's great, right? Satan wants us all. And if I'm not noticing any temptations, any discomfort, anything, maybe I need to look and see if I'm actually not making it easy on Satan and he just doesn't bother with me anymore. Right? So, you know, that's one of... Yes, ma'am. Yeah, and again, I have no doubt that bothered Herod when John said that, but the indication is it bothered his wife a whole lot more than it bothered him, or it bothered the woman he was with. We shouldn't be even saying his wife. It wasn't his lawful wife. It bothered Herodias a whole lot more than it bothered. I mean, she wanted his death. Herod, he didn't want to put him to death because I think the scriptures pretty clearly tell us Herod knew there was something to John the Baptist. That he had seen, the things he had seen, the things he had heard, and everything else, the things he had witnessed of John and his teaching, everything else. And probably in his heart, Herod knew he was wrong. But I'm sure he wasn't happy to hear that. Another lesson from this is that we also need to be careful about, and I don't know, want this to come out the wrong way, because we should love and respect those that are close to us and trust them. But we always need to be careful that the ones that are closest to us, the ones that we trust the most, are the easiest ones to get led astray by. And I'm not saying that we need to just constantly be all, I'm not listening to her because she's good. But, I mean, we have the account here that Herod would have never done that to John the Baptist if it wasn't being, you know, prodded on by his wife. And I know she's not a good person, so, you know, I'm not going to make a direct correlation, but it's just something that we need to keep our eyes open to, that sometimes, you know, always be aware that no matter how much somebody cares about us, they can still lead us astray. And we just need to keep an eye on it. Doesn't mean I need to also get my Bible out every time Laura says something to me, and let me see if she's trying to lead me astray here. But just be aware that even people that love us and care for us can lead us astray. Right? And so, you know, Herod here is convinced to do something that he doesn't want to do simply because his wife didn't like what this man had to say. Did John threaten him anyway? Did John try to lead a revolt against him because he thought he was doing something? All John did is make a statement. She's not, you should not be married to that woman. It's not lawful for you to have her. Right? That's all he said. Yeah. Yeah, and that's it's another good lesson right there that Mike brings up, that you know, sometimes we might catch ourselves in a position where we have to do something that's very uncomfortable for us in front of other men, because it's the right thing to do in God's eyes, right? Sometimes whatever it is, we make a promise to somebody, or we accept an invitation to do something, and we find out that what we accepted the invitation is not exactly what we thought it was going to be, and we get there and, this isn't really where I belong, but I promised them I'd go, so I'll just go along anyway. No? I'm like, what God expects us to do is just say, you know what, can't go. Right? I'm not sitting here casting any kind of judgment on anybody. You know, I've made plenty of mistakes in my life. And then, you know, just it kind of brings back to me a statement a long, long time ago, right after I'd got out of the Navy and just after I'd just come back to the Lord. I was teaching the high school class over there at Southwest along with another young man, and question was asked, you know, what do you tell your friends if they say, you know, we're going to the beach on Sunday, can you go, or do you want to go? And there was like 8 kids in the high school class that time, and all 8 of them put their hand up, and all 8 of them said, you just got to tell them I can't go. And yeah, that's true, but we also we shouldn't be saying I can't go. We should be saying I don't want to go. If you're going to go on a Sunday, I have no interest in it. Right? I've got better places to be. That's the right attitude to put out, not, as much as I'd love to be going with you, I got to go to church. And sometimes that's the way it comes out when we say stuff. And we just got to be careful that we're not putting that out, you know, and when we get into certain situations, yes, we got to make the right choice. We got to make the right choice and do the right thing that obviously Herod didn't do here because he didn't want to be embarrassed in front of those that he had, you know, made this oath in front of. But also not just that we make the stance that we need to make, but watch how we make it. Watch how we say it. You know, are we really putting the message out we're trying to put out? Yeah, it is very true. Can't go. I'm going to church, but it's not, I can't go, I have to go to church. It's, I'm not going because I want to go to church. You know, I'd much rather be at church than I would be fishing with you on Sunday. That's the image we should be putting out.
Darryl,
yes.
As we come into services and not we pass by the way of some school, and they're out there practicing football, and I thought this is just absolutely ridiculous that the kids are put to this here, and I don't know exactly who to blame for all of that. The games are in practice on a Wednesday night or on any night where it would keep people from serving the Lord.
Yeah, and it's yeah, it's getting more and more common. There are events scheduled for Sundays, not football games, but you know, good friend of mine there at Southwest, we go to the Gator games together, and several times we've thought about getting tickets to basketball games, but you know what? Wednesday night. They play Wednesday night during the week, and then they play Saturday. And we're like, we're not going to buy season tickets to basketball when we know we can't go to half the games, half the home games, not even counting the away games. So we're going to buy season tickets to go to, at best, one quarter of the games. And just, but, you know, not going on Wednesday. But there's all kind of, even in our schools and stuff, there are events, you know, that are scheduled on Sundays. You know, we just need to be more and more aware of that. But what else do we get from John the Baptist? We got a couple more minutes here. Just about done.
At the end of too many times people fall to go along with something to maintain their position with a group or with their status with the company or something of that nature that they would not otherwise.
Yeah, I when I was a young man, when I was here at this congregation as a high school student, I fell into that exact same thing. I went to work at my junior year of high school, I went to work at Pizza Hut with the strict absolute, I don't work on Wednesday nights and I don't work on Sundays. And that held up for about 6 months. And then slowly but surely, started scheduling a little here, a little bit there, a little bit here, a little bit there. Next thing I know, I'm working every Wednesday night, every Sunday. And I was only, you know, 17 years old, and I didn't have the backbone to stand up and say, no, you promised me I wouldn't have to do this. I just thought I needed that. Back then it was only $3 an hour, but I thought I needed it. But, you know, and the truth is I didn't need it. I was still living at home. I didn't have any bills. I didn't really need it. It was just money so I could go to a movie or something once in a while. But I was never going to movies because I was working all the time. So, but yeah, we can't. We can't allow the conditions that are around us. With Herod, it was Herodias and his quick, overzealous promise. People give in on their morals and everything else on a regular basis to get a promotion, to get a little farther ahead, to get a little better working hours so that they can get three-day weekends or whatever it is. They're willing to work late and not make it to services on Wednesday night because that gives them Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. And we make these little compromises all the time that we think are little, but they're even something that may start off as little, more times than not, leads into something far worse. It just escalates, builds and builds and builds until next thing you know, we're in a place we never meant to be, just like Herod found himself. Herod in guarantee you, before that request was made, Herod never thought of putting John the Baptist to death. Yeah, right? Never thought of that. Yeah, yeah. The more times we let it slide, the easier it gets, right? Just like me when I was working at Pizza Hut, the first few times I missed services, it bothered me. Eventually, it got to where it didn't bother me as much, and eventually it got to where I just didn't care at all. Anyway, we're done. Mike will take over Sunday so you don't have to listen to me anymore.